Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast from the Early Morning Late Show. Good morning. It is 4 minutes after the hour, and happy Monday. So glad you're with us this morning. We're going to have a very interesting hour coming up. We're going to talk about the transgender issues as it relates to evangelicals and how we're supposed to be framing what's going on in the news that seems to be changing every day. So what I did was I went to my bullpen and got my two best closers, one from the American League, one from the National League, and I put them on the same show. So I have with me Dr. Bruce Ashford is going to be on the program, as is Dr. Peter Kapsner. So we're and Dr. Peter Kapsner is in studio and Dr. Bruce Ashford on the telephone, but we'll be bringing them onto the program in just a few minutes. I do want to give a heads up to our listeners that I'm not exactly sure all the terminology we'll be using today. It will be all appropriate, but it will be of an adult nature. Just because when we start talking about transgender issues, we can't help it but to discuss what's going on and how it is an adult subject. So I would want to just warn you to protect the little ears, and this will also be on a podcast. So if you feel it's appropriate for you to turn the station for now, you can always go to myfaithradio.com and go to the Early Morning Late Show and then listen to it on podcast. So we've got a great discussion planned. I also would encourage you, with any and all of your questions, to pick up your phone and give us a call, because we've got the experts in the studio. So this is one not to miss. 877-933-2484 will get you to our studio line, and we would welcome your questions or comments for my two guests. So that is what we're going to do in the next hour. Thanks for listening. We'll take a short break and get our discussion underway in just a minute. Good morning. It's 7 minutes after the hour. We're going to have a very interesting hour-long discussion this morning with Dr. Bruce Ashford and Dr. Peter Kapsner. We're going to talk about the transgender issues. While those two were doing research over the weekend, I was buying a new squeaky nose because I'm kind of the rodeo clown in this discussion. I'll be moderating, but they will be doing most of the point-making, and I will be you know, there's probably a downside that I don't see to this whole thing, but I guess I'll find out at the end of the hour. But with me is Dr. Bruce Ashford, and he is on the line. Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning, Bill. Thank you for having me on the show again.
Oh, this is going to be interesting. Dr. Peter Kapsner, good morning.
Good morning, Bruce. Good morning, Bill.
Hey, great to have you guys here. You know, because we have an hour, I want to kind of set the stage. So if you wouldn't mind, Bruce, maybe just give a little background as to how you're in a position to be commenting on this.
Yeah, so I serve as a provost and professor of theology and culture at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. So I teach courses that involve the interface of Christianity and public life, and also write for the Heritage Foundation, Daily Signal, and for Fox News Opinion on social and cultural issues. And so this is just a big issue that continues to resurface over the past 15 years or so. And something that I think that we as Christians need to be able to sort of wrap our heads around.
And it certainly changes almost every day, doesn't it, the news?
It does. Something new every week.
It's hard to navigate through all of this, so I appreciate your expertise and your willingness to participate. Peter, you're next.
Well, after that, I just read Bruce's blogs, and that sort of gives me what I need to know. You know, it was an interesting journey for me. I teach matters of practical theology, both at Bethel University here and at Northwestern as well. And it was 2007 or so that I made the mistake of making myself available for whatever classes my department chair needed back then.
Mm-hmm.
And I gave him a list of classes I would like to teach, and one of them was called Female and Male in a Biblical Perspective. and Bethel had just lost its professor to Rice University or something. So there was an opening with that, and he chucked me into that class, and I had a couple sections of it, and it's been quite a wonderful learning curve over these last 10 years, just responding in research to the students' questions, and wow, have they changed over the course of the last 10 years as well. It was a very different environment back then, and sometimes I wish I could rewind myself back into the classroom at that time, because I could get a little sense of how our society has changed dramatically over the last 10 years on a number of these issues.
Mm-hmm. Now, Bruce, were you chucked in, or did you go voluntarily?
You know, I did it voluntarily.
Okay.
You know, so
we have one chucked and one volunteer. All right, Bruce, if we may, let's start just talking about some of the basic terms that and kind of run through some definitions, because I think that's probably a good place to start in terms of having this discussion and having some wisdom.
Okay, great. Let's do that. If it's okay, could I refer to an event in the news cycle?
Oh, please.
For a moment?
Please.
You know, so for the past 15 years or so, we've been having this question about gender dysphoria and transgenderism sort of come up from time to time. And most recently, in the past month, there have been a number of articles, because one of the world's leading gender reassignment surgeons, Miroslav Georgievic, has come forward and said that there are some real concerns with the surgeries. Basically that a high number of folks who have received gender reassignment surgery have come back to have it reversed. And it's a very difficult thing to do because of they've have had to already mutilate the organs of these persons, and then they'll have to reconstruct them. So there's reversal surgeries, but he also said many of these persons experience crippling levels of depression and in a number of instances, even suicidal thoughts. So if you have one of the world's leading gender reassignment surgeons saying, whoa, hold on a minute, we need to rethink this and be very careful, then I think that's a pretty big deal. And so the discussion is back out there. So here's a few terms we need to know. Sex and gender. So traditionally, sex and gender meant basically the same thing. You were born a certain sex or a certain gender, male or female. But recently, those two terms have been split from each other so that the view is that a person has a sex but does a gender.
Hmm.
So you might have been born as a male sex, but you can do the female gender if you want. Does that make sense?
No.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't make sense, but hopefully linguistically, for the moment, it does. So then there's the term gender identity, and this phrase is just used to say that a person can identify as a particular gender even if they weren't born with that physical sex. Two really big terms that are confusing for a lot of folks are transgender and cisgender. A cisgender person is a person who identifies with the physical sex with which they were born. A person who is transgender identifies with the sex with which they were not born, or identifies with several genders. There's the phrase gender dysphoria. Gender dysphoria just means the confusion and psychological stress that a person feels when they don't feel like the gender that they were born with. And so a person could experience gender dysphoria and not identify as transgender. It's a pretty important point. So a person could have been born with male organs and be named, you know, Bob or whatever, and have confusion and feel more like a woman than a man, but never come out and affirm that they are wanting to change genders. So those are the basic terms. And one more, gender reassignment surgery. So gender reassignment surgery is when a doctor goes in and alters the person, basically mutilates is the word that would have been used in the past, mutilates the person and changes their genitals either from the male genital into the shape of the female genitals or vice versa. So those are the basics.
Yeah, you know, and I so appreciate you laying out the terminology like that, Bruce, because this is it's been almost the tsunami that has swept across us these last 18 months. And so just to start to back up and get our head around some of what's happened, I think your working through just even that basic difference between sex and gender really helps frame the conversation, because that is a new idea. in our culture, that these would be split realities, that there would be a biology with which we are born, and then there's a sense of gender that we have about ourselves that many people believe is primarily sociologically constructed, meaning that how America might think of masculinity and femininity is going to be different than other places and countries and times in this world. And so what's fixed, it appears, is this idea of biology. But it's been a recent move to suggest that masculinity and femininity is primarily contextual, or it just is, it's only related to where you live and where you grow up, and there's not something bigger around that. And that creates the opportunity for a split between these two that really is the heart of transgenderism.
It's 19 minutes after the hour. So glad you're with us today. We're having a very interesting conversation with Dr. Bruce Ashford, Dr. Peter Kapsner. We're talking about gender issues. It is a pretty sensitive subject, so if the little ears are around, you might want to switch the station and then rejoin us when we're on up on the podcast at myfaithradio.com. I just make it easier. So when I'm thinking about, Peter, this discussion that we're having, and Bruce, about you're born a certain way, but your gender can be a preference. Is there like a 7-day waiting period that you have to go through before you can come out as a different gender? I mean, I know there's 7 days to get a gun.
It's a great question, and it's an interesting one that we even would have this kind of question, because it is so different, as Bruce was saying before the break, historically, in terms of how the world across cultures has understood gender and sex conversations. And I think the question that it raises for me, really, and has raised these last couple of years, is did we just suddenly become more enlightened and more intelligent as a society and finally figured out historically that there really is meant to be this idea of a sex with which you are born and a gender that then you can choose? Or are there other things going on within our culture that may be worth exploring to help explain the rise of this? And it's a tricky conversation, and especially because people really are hurting around this conversation, and there really is legitimate dysphoria taking shape. And so if we just have this conversation on an academic level and don't think about just the human experience of walking it out each day, I think that there can be a big miss with that. But I still go back to the central idea that did we become smarter suddenly in these last 5 years or so, or is there something else going on in our culture? And Bruce, I don't know what you've been seeing in your neck of the woods relative to that question, but I think it's worth exploring a wide variety of complex factors that are giving rise to this conversation.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the factors, you know, is gender dysphoria. I think there are people who are legitimately confused and, you know, psychologically stressed by feeling like they're a woman, but they're actually born as a man. But then another couple of factors is that, you know, we've got the transgender lobby. And, you know, it's become an ideology and a movement. And now this sort of way of thinking is being introduced to small children. And we're offering hormone therapy to children, very young children, who articulate that they're confused about their gender. And I just think this is very harmful. And there's even, you know, there's some medical evidence. I'm trying to pull up my notes here. I've got there's a paper published recently by an endocrinologist, a biostatistician, and a psychiatrist who are trying to challenge the practice of hormone therapy. And what they say is that, listen, 80% of kids who are confused about their gender because they've been told at school that they should be confused about it or could be confused about it or whatever, 80% of them never experience it again. They grow out of it, never experience it again. And basically, they concluded that hormone-induced puberty suppression is harmful and even abusive. So my point there is that you've got some folks who experience gender dysphoria. I think they legitimately do experience that. But you also have a situation in which there's a movement and an ideology that's making a much bigger deal out of this than ever would have been made out of it to begin with. And it introduces the idea of transgenderism to children when they're young and to society at large. So that's, I think, another set of factors. And third, I would just say that a theological or philosophical component to this is that we've erased the lines of truth. We've spent the last 50 years since the sexual revolution arguing that there are no moral absolutes and maybe no truth absolutes at all. And when you do that, you know, that world is a once you erase the lines of truth, anything goes.
It's so true when you talk about how that starts early as well in erasing some of the lines of truth. I was speaking with a middle school counselor friend of mine yesterday, and she was saying that when she's in middle school, there the school is starting to say that if we can't get to them before the age of 7 or 8, we've already lost the conversation, that people are making decisions about themselves around 7 and 8 on the gender identity spectrum, and that's the nature of the conversation right now. So it's so complicated when you start so early, and I saw some of the same research of which you're speaking, where there was a quite liberal scholar out of Pennsylvania suggesting that we have to stop this hormone therapy as a way to remedy the dysphoria in somebody, and equating it herself, as she talked about, with child abuse too, where these young people trying to navigate these difficult situations, and suddenly we're altering their very physiology around this, and do they really have the critical thinking to be able to make such huge choices relative to their biology and physiology? And she was saying, as you mentioned, and again, this was a very liberal scholar who was saying, we need to stop and have some more significant conversations, as opposed to just assume that this is a disconnect between gender and sex, and we just need to remedy that through hormone therapy, that there's a lot more going on, and we need to get to the heart of this before we prescribe these remedies.
And I think a good point that we need to make, for folks who are listening, you might think that the transgender movement is about sexual activity, and that shouldn't be equated. Those aren't exactly the same thing. I mean, those two facts do impinge on each other, you know, the gender somebody identifies with and what sort of sexual activity they might undertake, but there are two different issues. I want to introduce just a few more terms quickly when we're talking about sort of the everything is up for grabs in our culture. It's not just that we have people who identify as heterosexual or homosexual anymore. We understand those terms, but also bisexual. That's a person who expresses sexual desire toward members of both sexes.
Kevin Spacey.
We also have what's called,
Kevin Spacey.
Yeah, we have something also called pansexual, which has nothing to do with a pan. It just means directing sexual desire not just toward traditional male and female genders, but towards people who are transgendered, androgynous, or gender fluid. Those are some more terms that we don't have time to define. But in other words, they're sexually attracted toward any type of person who identifies, you know, as any other sort of gender at all. Then you have polysexual, which says, hey, I'm more than bisexual. I'm attracted to more than two of these things, but I'm not pansexual. I'm not attracted to all of them. Then you have asexual, which are people who say that they are not interested in and do not desire sexual activity at all. This is unbelievably complex. It's very hard to keep track of. But this is the sort of thing that our children are, you know, being introduced to and are having to sort of make sense of when they're 6 or 8, 10 years old.
It was when you bring up that many different kinds of terms, Bruce, I remember it was a couple of years ago, I was given a presentation at a college around sexuality for the faculty, and I was one of the panel members, and the presenter before me presented the idea of the gender-bred man or gender-bred woman, and it was about this fluidity of gender, and made the point that there was some 40 or 45 different terms now that are kind of roaming through social media, ways in which you can identify yourselves, whether it's pansexual or asexual or some derivative of. It was the first I'd heard of how many different ways and possibilities we have to identify ourselves. And as I listened to the presentation, the light went on a little bit for me in the sense that I started thinking about what were ways in which I was trying to identify myself as an adolescent, when you're confused a little bit about the world, when you don't really know where you're headed, when you just really want a sense of belonging more than anything else. And how did I do that? And back then, we didn't have these conversations around sexuality, so your desire for belonging manifested itself in other ways.
Wow, this is going to be we're going to continue our conversation. We do need to take a break, but please feel free to give us a call with your question or comment, 877-933-2484. My guests are Dr. Bruce Ashford, Dr. Peter Kapsner. We will take a short break and continue our conversation in just a minute.
Some years ago at the Residential Counseling Center for Troubled Teens called Heartlight, we helped a girl through some particularly tough issues. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. After a lot of hard work and the unconditional love of her parents, she was able to move on to a new life with both joy and celebration. And just recently, I tearfully watched her say her wedding vows. The bride wore a ring on both hands, one that we gave her to represent victory in her personal life and her new wedding band. At that special moment, she said to me, I wouldn't have my wedding ring without first having the ring you gave me. Moms and dads, don't give up. Keep believing that your sons and daughters can turn out to be all that God created them to be.
Mark Gregston is the author of a brand new book for grandparents titled Leaving a Legacy of Hope. Learn more. Go to ParentingTodaysTeens.org.
Good morning. It's 25 minutes until the top of the hour. So glad you're with us this morning. We're talking about a very sensitive issue, transgender issue. So we're going to be very careful to make sure you get a chance to get the little ears in a different room if you're listening. Or you can certainly go to myfaithradio.com and check out the podcast after the show. I have as my guest this morning, Dr. Bruce Ashford. He is on the telephone, and Dr. Peter Kapner is in studio. And gentlemen, before we get back into our conversation, and this is part of getting back into the conversation, maybe we should reaffirm the purpose of sex.
That's a good question, Bill. You know, in teaching sexuality these last 10 years, I stumbled upon that I have to actually start with addressing that topic. I didn't realize that at first, but we so often don't talk about these things in our churches and our families beyond just a conversation here and there. And so at the risk of reducing this down too far, so and the risk of misunderstanding, I think one of the central realities around sex is obviously there's more going on than just physical touch back and forth. There's a real intimacy of soul that happens between two people. And the first time we see it show up in the biblical text is in Genesis 2, where it talks about the male and the female becoming one flesh. And the context for that is their stewardship of God's creation. And knowing that God's creation needs ongoing stewarding, it needs people that can care for it day in and day out, that this great gift of sexual intimacy between the two of them would keep them united together as male and female, both bringing to the table what is required for God's stewardship. So, and that's a very simplistic answer on some levels, and it needs several weeks to unpack, but the point of that is that if you can fracture the stewards, or if you can somehow shift the masculinity and femininity of God as represented in creation, then you start wreaking havoc on the very people who are supposed to care for it. And so that sexual intimacy was really meant as this beautiful union between two very different people, male and female, to keep them united together as they faced outward and stewarded God's creation. So there was way more going on than just, hi, this is about my physical pleasure and desire. It was really something that was to keep them together for the stewarding of God's world.
Mm. Well said. Bruce?
Yeah, so I don't know that I could put it any better than Peter just put it. To apply it to transgender issues rather than just sexual activity in specific, I think, you know, when we go into the scriptures, there are three things we need to affirm. There are three actually sort of acts in the Bible's narrative: creation, fall, and redemption. And with creation, what we have to recognize is that when God created the world, he spoke the world into existence. He used his word to call forth something from nothing, and then he used his word to shape it and make it into something. And so you have repeated, every time God makes something, you'll see in the Genesis account it says, and the Lord said, and then after he makes it, it said, and it is good. So God spoke the world into existence and wanted it to be a particular way, and then he said, the particular way that I created is a good way. And so the differences, the sex differences and gender differences, are intended by God. We need to remember that God is the ultimate authority in the transgender debate. Now, in a democracy, we are tempted to equate the voice of the people with the voice of God. And that's what the whole wrong side of history debate is about. Well, most people think you're wrong, and you're going to find yourself on the wrong side of the majority opinion from this point out in history. Well, that's okay. We're not on the wrong side of history. If history includes the fact that Christ is going to return one day to institute a one-world government and a one-party system and rule the world under a worldwide reign of peace and justice and love and rightness. So does that make sense?
Oh, ton of sense.
Yeah, it does. And I think what it does for me too, Bruce, is it then in this great in-between time when Jesus talks about, I go to prepare a place for you, he's really referencing this beautiful betrothal period that we're in as his bride, as we're heading towards that end marriage supper of the Lamb, as it were. I think the question comes up is then, how do we live in the midst of this time where we have these legitimate questions? And to be real concrete about it, I remember at a church last year, I was fielding a question and answer in a youth group conversation with a few hundred people, and one of the young people wanted to transition their gender, and the youth group and leaders were really wrestling with how to walk that out. And so, you know, I think where people are living day in and day out with this is how do we help people navigate these difficult questions? And if somebody comes to us and says, I'm experiencing some dysphoria, or I'm considering transitioning, how do we start walking these things out with both a mind towards grace and truth, as it were?
Yeah, good question. Let me mention two resources.
I wrote that
really
question,
quickly.
Bruce, just so you know.
Okay.
I wrote it and then handed it to Peter. And he
yeah,
wrote it.
I only read what Bill tells me here.
Yeah.
That's the advantage of being in studio.
Yeah.
So, you know, two resources. One is I have written a series on this on my website. It's BruceAshford.net. It's called An Evangelical Guide to Transgenderism. It's at BruceAshford.net. But more importantly, there's a book out that's an excellent book entitled God and the Transgender Debate. It's very well written, can be understood by any thoughtful American. God and the Transgender Debate by Andrew Walker. Walker talks about when we're talking with a person who experiences gender dysphoria, you know, you have to realize that these folks have been taught, we've all been taught in America, to look within ourselves for true meaning, to follow our hearts, to be true to ourselves. We've been taught that there should be no social or moral norms that tell us what to do, that we should feel free to do whatever we wish, express ourselves however we wish. And so that's sort of the cultural context. Folks have been encouraged to do this. And Andrew says that there are four things we need to learn to do as we love people who experience gender dysphoria. One is we need to recognize their God-given dignity. This is a person created in God's image who possesses great worth, deserves honor and respect, doesn't deserve to be treated as an outcast. So dignity. Number two, empathy. We should work hard to sympathize and maybe even empathize with them. Try to see life from their perspective. Third is to have compassion, to befriend folks with gender dysphoria and walk with them through their life experiences, through their struggles. And then finally, to have patience, that this sort of thing, like anything, is for the long haul. Love is hard work, and when we're loving somebody who is experiencing the effects of the fall, like we all do, then we have to love them over the long haul. Think about our own issues. Each of us who are listening to this show, or the three of us who are talking on it, we're broken, and we're broken in multiple different ways because of the fall. You know, we're sinful, and our sin is something, and our confused thinking is something that lasts over the long haul. It doesn't get fixed immediately. And we need to recognize that about folks who experience gender dysphoria.
And I think what I love about what you're saying there too, Bruce, and just walking through those four ways in which to think about this is I think about my own life often, and am I leading with sort of this humility and this forbearing spirit that doesn't just embrace all things as okay? I think we get confused that humility and forbearance means that all things are fine and everything is okay, but to recognize first and foremost that might not be the kind of dysphoria I experience around gender, but there's all kinds of disconnects in my own life relative to who I am and how I'm aligned with God's beautiful kingdom. And so if I start with looking at myself first, it feels like my eyesight changes towards people who are struggling in other areas. And it doesn't mean we just sort of sit in our lump of stew together, but it means that we can start walking towards truth and wholeness in God's kingdom with this. But I get a sense I need to start with me first and then start looking outward from there.
Yeah, you know, Vaughn Roberts is an Anglican pastor. I think he's in the UK. And I like the way he puts it. So he, when he tells his own life story, and he talks about how he experienced same-sex attraction for as long as he can remember from the time he was a kid. And
¶¶
Good morning. It's 11 minutes until the top of the hour. Got a very interesting conversation this morning with Dr. Bruce Ashford, Dr. Peter Kapsner. We're talking about transgender issues, which is a moving target. It certainly is changes all the time. And a week doesn't go by where there's not something that pops up in the news. I think recently I read that there's now some either legislation or some kind of move to try to get back to your original birth certificate that you can change that. So there's absolutely no proof or record of you having started off a specific gender.
Yeah, and these little sound bites that happen week in and week out cause over time a massive cultural shift. And so going back to my friend who's this middle school counselor, and she had been away for 6 years, and she just got back into the school system. And I asked her the question, what is it that you have to deal with most with young people these days, not expecting what her answer would be? And she said that the majority of people coming into my office these days are asking questions around their gender, around their sexuality, trying to figure out who they are, their sense of identity. She said that was not the case 6 years ago. But we take these little incremental steps each week, as you mentioned, with headlines that come. And all of a sudden we find ourselves in an entirely different cultural situation 5 years after the fact.
Mm-hmm. And are we doing a good enough job of letting the world see that we are distinctly different? We are not standing in support of trans reassignment surgery, or, you know, instead of saying us, maybe we should be referring to as they.
Yeah, well,
they are, not we are, right?
Yeah, and it's hard because the church, I think, has a checkered past a little bit of being fairly hating towards people that have been in same gender relationships or transgender situations. And so the pendulum has swung away from, well, we don't want to hate. We for sure don't want to do that. But there isn't this ability to really walk in tension where there's a clear idea of the beauty of God's kingdom that we're living out, that we're representing, that really does represent the truth of how we're meant to live. And so in the absence of that, I think the church has stayed mostly silent or doesn't know how to talk about these things. And so I think in the fear of taking a stand to once again move back towards just, you know, shouting repent or perish at everybody, mm-hmm. there's a difficult way. How can we live out the beauty of the light of truth in a way that can really bring people back to Jesus in this restorative process?
Right. We have a caller on the line, Matthew from Chanhassen. I'd like to reach out and give you a pat on the back, but that's too far. Matthew, do you have a question for the doctors?
Good morning.
Good morning.
At what point does one do or do not say, you know, no, I'm not going to call you a woman. You know, you're not a woman. Or why would I call you a man? You're not a man. At what point does one put their foot down and, you know, you know what I mean?
I think so. We'll try to tackle that. Thanks for calling, Matthew. Peter?
This seems like a great question for Bruce.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, so I think one of the ways to handle a conversation, so as Peter was saying earlier, we've got two things that we're doing, that we're trying to do. We're trying to exhibit when we're interacting with a person who's broken by the fall and by sin. That's all of us. And one is, on the one hand, we're wanting to speak truth. You know, it's not loving to not tell the truth. But then on the other hand, we want to tell the truth in a way that's gracious. Truth without grace, it makes us a bully. Grace without truth makes us kind of a wimp or a non-entity, a wallflower. But the truth plus grace combination is the power that our Lord had. And so when we're addressing somebody who is identifying with a gender different from their birth sex, I think one of the things we can do if we want to avoid using a pronoun that is the wrong pronoun for God's creational design for that person is we can use their name. Just the name, even the name they identify with, even if it's a traditionally female or male name that's different from their biological sex. A name is a name, and I think we can use the name. And so that's one thing that we can do provisionally while we're talking, before or until or even after we have a conversation with them about gender identity and the Bible's design for it. I know it's kind of an unclear answer, but it's a little bit of an unclear issue. It's a gray area where we want to speak the truth, but do it graciously. You know, we don't want our first words, our first actions toward a person to slam a door shut. You know, we want to be able to affirm the person and treat them with love and legitimize them and treat them with honor, while at the same time not affirming something that's not true.
Yeah, I think this is really well said too, and I think are we going to speak that truth from a place of power over and anger and just, you know, creating a line of division between us? Or I see so often in the text, Jesus's anger is primarily reserved for those systems of power that have been oppressing people in the kingdom, not allowing them in God's kingdom, the least and the lost and the people who have been cut out. And when he speaks truth into other segments, it's often through the lens of a lament. And it is, I'm sad about this. I'm grieved with this. And so can we learn to be able to speak the truth through a sense of lament and grief and not lead right away with being able to say, well, I can't even have a conversation with you anymore until you allow me to use your true gender or something. It just seems like that's going to create division that we don't need.
Yeah, you know, there's three, I teach people, you know, I teach my students that there's three questions that we need to ask when we walk into any situation, when we think about any created or cultural reality, whether it's a person or a situation or a created thing. As we always want to have in our mind the question, what is God's creational design for this person or for this situation? We talked about that today, about God's design for gender and sex. The second question we always want to ask is, how has this person or this situation or this created thing been corrupted and misdirected by the fall? Because the consequences of the fall cut through every sector of society, every sphere of culture, every human heart. So we want to find where it's been corrupted and misdirected. And then third, we want to ask, how can we, through the Bible's teaching, through the gospel, seek to bring healing and redirection where there has been corruption and misdirection? And Peter talked about healing a moment ago, and that's a great term. And then I think redirection is a good term. When things have become misdirected, aimed at something God didn't intend them to be aimed at, we want to help redirect what's been misdirected. So those are three questions, pretty simple to ask, but sometimes difficult to answer. Three questions that serve us well in any social situation or in dealing with any cultural reality.
It's been a fast hour. I can't believe we're kind of at the place where we need to wrap things up. Bruce, I can't thank you enough for your work and research on this and how you're framing everything and giving us a perspective that we may not have without your kind of leadership. So thank you very much.
Bill, thank you for having me on the show.
Yep.
I love your show, and I hope you'll invite me back again, and I'll send you that $500 for letting me be on the show this time.
Yeah, make sure it's cash, small bills. And
okay, it's Russian rubles, actually. You're okay.
And Peter,
send it in four laundry bags.
And Peter, usually you don't have these long segments.
You have never allowed me to stay this long before, Bill.
I
don't know what to make of that. I'm going to need to think about this a bit.
Usually by this time you've run into the stairwell and burst into tears. So
yeah,
nice
you do drive me to that. That's for sure. I need some of those rubles.
All right, we got to wrap things up. I'll be back to wrap up in just a minute. That wraps up the show. Thanks so much for listening. Give me a call on the studio line or email bill@myfaithradio.com. See you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show. Connecting.